This is Whitley Strieber, and this is Dreamland. You've reached the edge of the world. Well, today, folks, we have a guest with us who has never been on Dreamland before. I basically got to know him because every time I went to a UFO conference, he was there. Almost every UFO conference I went to. In fact, I don't think I've been to one that I haven't seen Alan at in years. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome Alan Steinfeld to Dreamland, and we're going to find out exactly what this guy is all about. Welcome, Alan.
Well, thank you. Thank you. You know, it's been my obsession sort of to find every little piece of evidence or confirmation about the ET UFO experience. And I've called my company New Reality, which is a platform I use for my interviews, because I want to know what I don't know. And so that's led to me going to every UFO conference I can find, because there's something in that field that represents the unknown for human civilization.
All right. Well, where did this start with you? Do you come out of some sort of experience or something?
Yes, yes, yes. I've always felt like an outsider to this dimension, to this human existence, to civilization, to growing up in white bread America. At least that was my orientation. So I didn't feel like I belonged. I had a lot of friends. I had a good education. I had decent parents, very nice, loving parents, but I didn't feel a part of this world. I had experiences when I was young. I felt at some point I was being frozen and then pulled out of my body, out of the back of my neck, and I didn't know what that was about. And then out of body experiences, and I couldn't find anything about that in any religious or even spiritual literature. So, what was that? I mean, and no one seemed to be having those experiences that I knew were real to me. So, you know, I started to listen to things like Long John Neville back in New York, and I guess that was the 70s. You remember him, Whitley?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I listened to Long John Neville at night. Yeah, folks, he was one of the early late night talk show hosts, and anything could happen on his show, basically.
Right. So he was the first to talk about these strange experiences. I think even mentioning the idea of UFOs, which I never considered them. And so that started to begin an awareness that there were other realities besides what I was being force-fed on television, in movies, and politics by even my parents who didn't know any better. I mean, one story that comes to me in some writing I'm doing is called The Fuzz of Perception. And I write about how when I was 3 years old, I was put in front of a television set, and it was a black and white television set full of static, and I couldn't make out what people were looking at this glass box. There was no structure there. There was just gray static fuzz. And it wasn't until I became aware of certain movement patterns on that screen that I associated with patterns of people around me that the figures started to come through. I started to see human shapes, but it was only because of the pattern associations I made looking at this very strange static screen. So that became a kind of, marker for me to see, can I see through these patterns of reality that don't make sense to my conscious mind, yet represent another level of reality. And I started to find things like that available in the UFO literature and the abduction literature. And does that make sense about patterns of perception?
Well, yeah, it does make sense. And when you say, though, in the UFO literature and the abduction literature, we need to talk
yeah.
more about that. But before we go there are two things that have to happen. First, we're going to take a break for free Dreamlanders. And then when we come back, We're going to explore a little bit more deeply this business of feeling pulled out through your spine, because that happens to be a very critically important something that I don't think my listeners know much about, because I myself have just discovered its importance in very recently. So we'll be right back. One reason to join UnknownCountry.com is the fact that you get Communion, Transformation, The Secret School, Majestic, and Superstorm audiobooks. Another reason, all of the subscriber interviews all the way back to the beginning, and some of them are totally remarkable. All of our contactee interviews that Ann Strever did, deeply fascinating material. What is it really like to be inside this experience? If you're in it, you can learn more and more. And if you're not, then you can explore more and more. There is so much here. Join UnknownCountry.com today. Which means stop what you're doing, pause the show, go to unknowncountry.com, join now. Do it. We love you, and we'd really love you if you did it. We're talking to Alan Steinfeld. His website is newrealities.com. It's not up to date because it got hacked. Hey, big surprise. Yeah, coming from me, I'm not at all surprised. That happens a lot. It has not happened to our new website, thank God. We've got a lot of controls in place, and hopefully it won't happen. But in any case, let's get back, Alan, to this moment when you felt yourself being pulled out of the top of your spine. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that, and then we're going to discuss a little bit about what it may mean. But go ahead and tell us about that experience.
I actually need to know what it means, because it's been a puzzle. So my experience is I'm around 14 years old, maybe less, and I hear a very loud sound like a humming, and then I'm feeling frozen or paralyzed. And then there's a sense of something in the back of my neck, sort of by the brainstem, where the spine meets the skull, or a little bit above that, and I feel like there's a not quite electric, but it's a pulsation that's very, very unpleasant, and I feel as if something wants to pull my consciousness out of my body, and it's a struggle for me to maintain a sense of holding on to my body, and then and the top, it happens, I don't know, maybe a half a dozen times or more in that kind of puberty stage. And after that sensation was finished of that pulling or yanking, I would just feel unable to move. And I'd have to do what I call like a somersault in my mind in order to get back into my body. There's no other way I can think of describing that except in internal sense of finding my way home, I guess. Does that make sense? I've never really talked about
it. Yeah, it does make sense. And now, where were you living when this happened?
I was living on the South Shore of Long Island, which I know is kind of a hot spot.
Yeah, and south, close to the city, close to New
York?
Close
in between the city and Montauk. I know there are a lot of strange things happening in the city. Within
there
the 1960s,
now,
I just wasn't far from the water, I want to say. You know, there's lots of...
Right.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of this stuff happens more often near forests and big water, like oceans.
Right.
Now, I want to go a little bit more deeply into this. You never felt as if you had been pulled out of your body, had you? Did you?
I don't think I ever... If I was, I have no sense of awareness. I have to say, as I talk about this, and I don't mind talking about it, I feel a little sense of anxiety, which is fine. I'm willing to feel that, but if something comes up, like, let's go into it. Yes.
Well, we're going to get a little bit more anxious, so fasten your seatbelt.
Okay.
When did this happen in terms of dates?
I guess I'd say I was 14, 19, 15. I would say in the mid to late 60s, 68, 69, 70s, around when I was 13, 14, 15, I would say. And I was only a block from the ocean, from the bay, the you know, where the South Shore, Long Island, hits the suburban Nassau County lines there. So yeah, around the late 60s. Why does that mean anything to you?
The date isn't relevant. If it had been in the early 90s, it would be. Mm-hmm. Now, because in the early 90s, I believe, and I say believe because of the fact that this story was told to me by a nurse who was friends with a coroner who lived and worked in Brooklyn in the early 90s. Now, what they found were bodies, and there were about 17 of them over a period of time that had all been killed in the same way. They had had their spines cut open at the very area that you were just describing, and the spine pulled out roughly, not like a cattle mutilation. And they had been mutilated as well and then drowned in the ocean, probably right near where you lived in those days. So now we're gonna go back all the way to the beginning of our history, to the Pyramid of Unas, 4000 BC in Egypt, where in it there is contained a pyramid text that describes the spine as the anchor of the soul and is the first place in human writing where the chakras are described, and they are described as seven small serpents surrounding the circling the long serpent of the spine. And the ancient Egyptians believed that removal of the spine removed the soul. In other words, the soul would separate from the body when that happened. Mm. Now, were you being attacked or waked up? Because you did wake up. That's what happened. And you're still alive.
Mm.
So.
Well, I felt it was a modification. I mean, now I can sense something happened recently, wasn't as severe, and there was a voice that said, just relax into it. I mean, I don't know where that came from, but I felt it was a modification. It was a challenge to maintain a sense of awareness and self, but it may have been a modification of awareness, of an awakening, because then I, of course, my whole life has been dedicated to this idea of what is these new realities? How do we unfold consciousness? That's the most interesting thing. I never cared about career or money or, in a way, family. I've just been obsessed with this thing.
Yeah.
And so I also have to say, I think I'm from a history, a lineage of abductions, because my mother and her mother, my grandmother, would ride around in the mountains of Tucson and get lost in that interesting year of 1947, right around the time of the Roswell crash. They would talk about getting lost in those mountains. And my mother never lived outside of New York City until 1947. It was only for a brief time. So, and she has some strange phobias, like fear of cats and fear of, you know, some strange things that she would never believe is a sign of an abduction. But I think there is a lineage there. So.
Yeah, I would think there is. I think there's definitely a lineage. There almost always is a lineage.
Mm.
Almost always. In other words, this runs in families. The military families, military people who were involved in Roswell, it ran in some of those families. Mine is one of them. The and in the military in general, when military people come into contact with this phenomenon, soon enough, members of their families are involved in one way or another by the grace, primarily.
Right.
Now, that happens. And it happened to your mother, and you don't know what might have happened back in the past.
No.
And now, another thing that is apparently the case is that a lot of Indians in the United States, a lot of people of Irish extraction, a lot of black families have this in their families. Mm-hmm. And I believe are you totally Jewish, or do you have some other?
Well, you know, my research is that Eastern European Jews are actually not Semitic. They're the Ashkenazis, they call. They're from the Khazar. So there's a different sort of background, or I would say lineage there, to what is the Semitic Jews that came up and became the Sephardic population,
right,
of Europe and the Eastern Europe. But so I think there is something different about the Ashkenazi.
Well, they are noted for their interest and involvement in highly mystical Judaism, for, among other things. Free Dreamlanders, speaking of mysteries, solve these mysteries and help us keep the site going. You listen all the time without paying, and that's fine. We're not here to just make money, but we are here to stay alive. And I need you to go to unknowncountry.com and subscribe to Dreamland. It's $4.95 a month, one of the least expensive on the internet. It gets you an enormous archive to listen to and to explore with all kinds of some of the most interesting shows in the world. Because this podcast has been going on for a long time. Our archive goes back to 2004. And you can find in that amazing, amazing stuff. It is worth your money. Plus, on Wednesday evenings, there's a subscriber chat. I'm usually there. We have a free message board. We got all kinds of beautiful stuff on Unknown Country. So go to Unknown Country right now and subscribe. We'll be right back. Did you know that you can get the Path and the Communion Letters each for $3.99 as ebooks on Amazon? That's right, The Path and The Communion Letters. These are two fascinating books. The Path, of course, I wrote. It is a really unusual insight into the Torah and what it actually means, something that's probably been hidden there for a long, long time. But when you read it, you realize that the Torah of Marseille had to be about this because it's so beautifully organized. It was a discovery I made back in the 1970s, and now you can find out for yourself just how powerful a presence in your life and a guide the Torah can be. The Path, $3.99. The other book I want to talk about is The Communion Letters. If you have not read this, you need to. This is the best book of close encounter and abduction experiences ever created. It was created by Ann Strieber. The letters in it are now part of a permanent archive at Rice University, along with thousands of others that she collected. And I have to tell you, it is absolutely unique in the world. Also, $3.99. Don't miss either of these great books. They're terrific. And I'm very proud of The Path. It's unique in the world, and I'm so proud of Anne for having created The Communion Letters, also unique in the world. We're talking to Alan Steinfeld, his website, newrealities.com. This is a man whom I have known for some time, had a more unusual relationship to this phenomenon that we call close encounter, abduction, and whatever, than he himself realized. And I think we are exploring this together on this show today, which is, I've sort of ambushed Ellen. It's not fair, but it is interesting. Yeah, it is very interesting. So
it's therapy. It's what I mean, Whitley, I admire your work because you're one of the most lucid people who have faced this phenomena, and most people are not as aware. And this is what you're bringing to me is another level of awareness that, you know, I've read the books, I've gone to the conferences, but there's still a wall, I feel, between what happened, what I experienced throughout my childhood, and even past years, and what really happened. So,
yeah,
you're helping in that arena.
Well, we're exploring this because, you know, you're a guy, here's a guy, folks, who goes to every conference, who looks and looks and looks. And I'm here to say, let's figure out what you're looking for.
Thank you.
Yeah, exactly.
No, because I don't know what I'm looking for, the truth is. You know, that really is. Why am I obsessed with this strange? Why aren't I a normal person? Why don't I just, you know, get a regular job? You know, why, what is going on here?
Yeah, exactly. What is going on here? And the question is huge. It's so big that, you know, a few words, it sounds like, well, we can figure that out. Well, I don't know about that. I mean, we have apparent people actually killed. Were their souls stolen? What happened to them? What happened to them? What might have happened to you? But instead of some terrible event taking place in your life, you were awakened. You were waked up.
I was.
Something.
To this, then I've called my kind of obsession new reality. There's these different levels of perception, because my perception was also altered. I had a mystical experience. I did meet this teacher, this kind of spiritual teacher. And in that moment of connection, I felt as if I was greater than my body. I knew that there was a soul that was aware of awareness that was beyond the physical. And that really became the conscious pursuit of this journey to find out. And looking at the fear, which is probably still there. It's probably still buried in, like, what is the fear of these beings?
Well, yeah, because it's obviously still there. You would have more comfort. You would have thought about this more. But I know you well, and I know you haven't thought about it much at all.
Well, I thought about it, but I keep running up against a wall that I don't know. Maybe you're a messenger of this to help bring this out. I don't know, Whitley, but...
Well, because throughout human history, this kind of experience has energized people and made them into searchers. What is new and disturbing is this business of spines being pulled out of bodies. Now, I personally think, I suspect that it was done by a serial killer who was trying to mimic the cattle mutilations, because these bodies were not, they were damaged in ways that mimic the cattle mutilations, but not with anything close to the skill that was involved. And they all took place in one community over a period of time. What happened, there's a sort of denouement here, is that the FBI came in and took it over, and the whole thing just disappeared. So we don't know what happened after that, but we do know that prior to that, over the course of human history, this particular type of murder has not occurred. Because if it had occurred, it would be in the record, because it's so extraordinary and so unusual. And subsequently, it hasn't occurred either very much, if at all, because the FBI is not going to be able to run around and solve these cases all over the world. We would know.
Right.
We would know.
Yeah, I think what happened to me was not that. You know, in the literature, there is talk about amplifications of the spine that the visitors do on people. You know about that. And I think
I do. That but you tell us about it. Tell us about it.
Well, I think I'll tell you because it was as when those experiences would happen, I would come back with this greater awareness, even though they were awfully traumatic. There was a sense of a greater awareness of my body. And my first conscious UFO, I guess, abduction, I would call it, was in 1987 with a girlfriend I had. We were driving cross country and we parked by this, this deserted, canal. It said, enter at your own risk, I guess, because the canals would flood. And, We felt like we were frozen all through the night. We couldn't move. I didn't have any memory of anything that happened that night because it was just kind of frozen in place. But the next day, the sexual activity we had together was incredibly amplified, and it was on a level of vibration that neither of us had felt before, as if we were electrically charged with something else. And I think somehow that's related to this amplification of the human nervous system, which I think they, whoever they are, want to happen to the abduction population, or at least some of that. And I feel more sensitive sometimes to certain situations. I'm sure, do you know what I mean by that amplification?
Yeah, intensification is another word for it.
Yes, of the nervous system
right.
itself. And that's what I think was happening. I don't think it was necessarily, it's sort of like going to the dentist that's being pulled out. It's like not pleasant, but it was a modification of the, at 14, 15, when this was happening to me, of the central nervous system that is activated to a multidimensional awareness. That's what I make sense of in this kind of relaying of a phenomena.
And in from our side, when we do the sensing exercise patiently, night after night, day after day for years, this also comes. It comes with time. But when it comes in from the other side, there's a lot more energy. And this intensification can happen like in a minute. But when what it is an intensification of the strength of second body, the electric field changes. It becomes more coherent, if that makes sense. And when that happens, you become a richer receptacle of experience. And that right. makes you very interesting on the other level because they very much want to share that, not just good or experiences, but all experiences, and especially sexual experiences, which is why this amplification occurred.
Right. And in the sexual experience, well, a year after, I think that traveling in the 87, 88, I was woken up in the middle of the night and given this little creature in my hand. All I can say was looked like a deer with big black eyes. Of course, that would have been a screen memory.
Right.
And they woke me up by tickling the inside of my thigh. It's like they ran this furry thing three times inside my thigh, which is a very strange sensation.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that sensation. It's happened to me any number of times. And Alan doesn't add that it's really disturbing.
It's very disturbing because it's like, who wants just the inside of your thigh being tickled in the middle of the night?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the most recent time it happened to me was in February of 2017 when I was begging the visitors to show up. And they were saying that people couldn't communicate with them. And therefore, if they showed up, people would just be frightened. And because they are absolutely frightening. There's no question. I know why now, too. Now,
why are they so frightening?
They are frightening because they see more of time. They see your end. They see your beginning and your end. They know your death. And it's the same reason that when you, if you get a dog and you look into the eyes of the dog, after a few minutes, the dog gets very uncomfortable. And the reason is that the dog is seeing in your shadowy eyes a mystery that he fears and doesn't understand, which is the mystery of death. When we look into the eyes of the visitors, we see not just the mystery of death, but the whole extent of our lives. And that's what makes it so hard.
Go ahead. I also have a fear, not just that, but the sense that reality is not what I thought it was at all.
Not at all.
And it's not so, I guess you could call it death or ego death or the death of the comfort I think I have of knowing the world as it's been conditioned into me. And when the world is not what we thought it was, that's, John Mack called it ontological shock. It's a shock.
It's a tremendous shock.
Yeah.
And you've lived that shock.
Well, I've lived it, but I haven't accessed it. You know, I'm still struggling.
You're struggling with it, but you know, you're half the listeners here are in the same boat. I am. We're all struggling with it. Maybe all of us, maybe every single person listening to this is in the same struggle, involved in the same struggle. And you didn't realize it before we started, but this is why you're here, because I knew damn well where you were coming from. I've known you for years, and now I really came to understand you last summer at the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation in that conference, that incredible experience there, which we're going to talk about a little bit more in the second half hour of the show. And we have reached that point, Free Dreamlanders. And so if you want stuff like this that you cannot hear anywhere else, you can't, and I know you can't, because there isn't anybody else who is deep enough in this experience to even ask questions like we ask here on Dreamland. You need to subscribe. We'll be right back.
Ever wonder what the Close Encounter experience is all about? Think you know what it's about? When you open Whitley and Ann Strieber's Immortal Communion Letters, you're going to experience a whole new vision. Not something being told to us by researchers and theorists, but the actual testimony of people who came face to face with this unknown. Unforgettable. And the book is only $3.99 at Strieber.com.
This is Whitley Strieber. I'll be at the Portal to Ascension Conference October 4th to the 6th, 2019. Go to ascensionconference.com to find out more. It's going to be a really good show. Michael Tellinger will be there. JJ and Desiree Hertok, Travis Walton, and of course, yours truly. I'll be talking about A New World, the new book that I am bringing out, as well as ongoing contacts with Anne, who is still very much part of this whole operation. Incredibly. What a life. Don't miss me at the Portal to Ascension Conference. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Earthfiles.com is Linda Moulton Howe's great website, offering news of the edge of science and reality. Keep up with Linda's work every single day on earthfiles.com. Whitley Strieber became the host of Dreamland in 1998, and he's still the host today. One of the first podcasts, Dreamland has been built into the premier program of its kind, exploring the edge of science and reality. The show's archive on unknowncountry.com dates back to 2004. Dreamland is a treasure unique in the world. Help keep us on the air by subscribing to unknowncountry.com today. Go to unknowncountry.com and click on the subscribe tab. Dreamland, where wonder is spoken.
We're talking to Alan Steinfeld. His website, newrealities.com. Alan also has a YouTube channel, and I think that's a lot more active than the website. Is that correct, Alan?
That's right. All my research goes onto my YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/newreality.
So it's youtube.com/newrealities. That's if you want to watch Alan's stuff, that's where to go to do it. And so that maybe is more important than the website.
It is, actually. It's where I put a lot of my attention in order to discover what we're talking about and explore lots of realms of consciousness. You know, there's a lot of people just talking about consciousness. And, of course, that doesn't go far enough for me because this idea of the visitor, if we can call them that, represents a realm of awareness that is barely conscious. And yet it's all around us. In my research, understanding, and lucid dreaming, this visitor's presence is I would say, as close as our breath. And I don't know why I say that, but and we're so culturally conditioned not to see it or feel it, and it's knocking harder than ever on these doors of perception that people like you and what I'm trying to do are opening in our own way. But it is such a struggle to create a new, wider perception. We're fighting against, 2,000, 5,000 years of tradition that says no, reality is a certain way.
Right.
And it's a huge break through to what I call, it could be described as eighth dimensional awareness, how I feel the visitors are living in the depth and we are living on the surface. And what they're trying to do is pull us into the depth, which actually is death and transcends death. And it's the universal consciousness that we all have, but haven't understood how to access. And this is what I feel they're waiting and they're pulling us towards, like pulling us out of our bodies towards with, and then with our bodies to take it with us, because we're here to be more than what we've been told is human. And, this is my obsession. How do we transcend what we've been conditioned to think we are in order to know the greater reality that is just waiting for us to say, I know there's more.
Now, most people think that we're dealing with aliens from another planet, In the past, the exact same entities were thought of as fairy folk and people who lived underground and lived in the forest and so forth. Now, however, some people are beginning to see this in a larger way. You are among them. So how do you see this at this point?
Well, first I want to say, maybe though, even though they've seen them as fairy folk and all this, that this might be a new phenomenon. I don't know if it is, but it seems like it's something else because we're in a different place. Or maybe we're just more aware of the cosmos than the primitive civilizations were. But I see it as something new is entering our psychic space, and we are new in as human beings in accessing that. So we are being met in a place beyond the past. And I think you kind of hit on some of this in Supernatural. It's not just a recapitulation of these old superstitions. There's something else that human civilization is finally realizing we're a part of. And this is where we're coming into as something bigger than what we have known in the past. There's something new happening here is what I feel. And it has to be defined. It's a new myth. It's like myth in the sense of something being true to our subconscious mind. And just by the way Jung took the myths of the ancient Greeks and made them internal manifestations of different aspects of the human being, this new myth is going to be at some point internalized to be known as a part of our greater psyche. And we have yet to be there. We're infants just trying to understand the world. But this is what's new, I feel. We're waking up, for those who want that, into something unknown that we're learning the language for that, as you say, is natural, but is part of a supernatural awareness.
Yeah, well, this is all very interesting. Now, I know you know a lot about art, and folks, if you look at the history of art, there is a huge, huge break, not with the coming of Impressionism and so forth in the 19th century, but in the early 20th century, there is this absolutely dramatic break. Art begins to look really, really different. And now, could it be that artists were picking up on the presence of a new consciousness in our world? How do you respond to that?
I think that's exactly, we are being primed through art and creativity to go transcend the naturalism, the realism, the superficial nature, and the role of the artist is to wake up this internal sense of feeling. Picasso said, if I paint a wild horse, you may not see the horse, but you'll see the wildness, you'll feel the wildness. And this is what modern art and its quest for being understood is trying to give us a sense of our awareness of feeling. There was just a show at the Guggenheim about a Swedish artist called Hilma af Klint. She was the first abstractionist. She just rewrote art history. The whole Guggenheim show was about a new way of understanding how abstract art was a channeling. She would be in touch with these masters, these ascended masters, whatever which she would call them, and they would come through her and paint these abstract shapes because they were giving her a code to a higher reality. I recommend everyone listening to check out the art of Hilma af Klint, A.F. Klint. That's K-L-I-N-T. And she came out of the theosophical tradition, and because of this Guggenheim show, she is called, even before Kandinsky, the first real abstractionist, non-representational. And she was after this other realm that can't be described. It can only be shown in a way. We can't talk about this. There are no words for this. There's no even culture for the understanding, but art is a doorway into perception.
Yeah. And suddenly in the 20th century, it all changes. Mm-hmm. And we're beginning to look, art starts to look inside the mind rather than at the world. And it's a fascinating and dramatic change. And it's as if something has come that is drawing us in this new direction.
Well, don't you think it's interesting that the 1890s, the end of the 1800s, beginning of the 20th century, was the first wave of UFOs seen around the world?
I was waiting for you to say that, because yeah. That I do think that's interesting. And in a couple minutes, it's going to get even more interesting because he's got some fascinating stuff to talk about these things. And now tell us about that early wave, what you know about it.
Well, what I know about it is they called it the airships, and people around the world, I think mostly in North America, would see these strange floating, they weren't like anything, they weren't air, it was before the era of airplanes, they were floating, sometimes cigar shaped, sometimes lights in the sky.
Yeah, they were like zeppelins, but yeah, it was before these things had been invented.
Yes, and people started to see them in the 1890s. They became so prolific, and especially in Northern Europe and the U.S., that they were called airships. They were given a name, and almost as a premonition of the airplane, of what was to come. But also people would have strange experiences. They would see flashes of light. They would call, there was no word for lasers, so they would be called tongues of fire. That would be emitted from these airships. So there wasn't the culture of what we've come into these days of what was called UFOs, which doesn't mean anything really. When we call something unidentified, when we label something unidentified, we're not really identifying it. We're giving it a name, and we think we know what it is.
Right.
And we don't know what it is because it hasn't entered the collective psyche. It's on the fringes of that. And when once we name something, then we define it. And anyway, back to the 1890s was a doorway into this other realm. And even War of the Worlds, if you read the opening lines of H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds, it says this was the end, the last decade of the 19th century was a time beings from another realm were spying on earthlings. And that's like sort of the, I can get the exact opening lines, but there was infused into the psyche of the world was an abstract nature that you're also saying came through art, but it was also in the skies. It was in the psyche of the human race and pushed its evolution. It pushed us into the
unseen.
And that's what modern times was about. It was things like radio waves, these invisible senses, these invisible awarenesses started to take place. X-rays was seeing through solid matter. So, I mean, this gave the sense of a modern psyche that we have yet to integrate being greater than just the five senses that we know. And then there was also an explosion of occult theosophical talk that influenced the sciences as well. The sciences and the occult were much more linked at the early 1900s than it was after, I would say, World War One, where it split, where science became a dogma and the occult was pushed aside. So in this unity, the theosophists were part of the formation of the early atom structures. I mean, they gave in their kind of psychic awareness what the structure of the atom was, and with Leadbeater and Besant. And so there was this awakening that somehow got fractured as the century progressed, and this whole idea of alchemy and astrology were discounted from its material essence, and we lost something in the West because science started to overrule this deeper sense of awareness that everyone knows is here. So,
you know, folks, the great Jim Mars wrote a wonderful book about the airship mystery. You can just go on Amazon, and I'm sure you can find the book about the airship mystery. Interesting little aside about it, one of the places where it was seen was over the corner where my great-grandmother's house was located at the time in San Antonio. So no one in my family reported seeing it, but that's where the local press reported it as being on that particular corner. So it has a sort of family connection in my life as well. Interestingly enough, it's as if the phenomenon stays a step ahead of us. In other words, first in the 1890s, we see these strange airships when there are no one has ever built one yet, at least not that we know of. And there are occasional interactions with the people on board the airships that are very enigmatic. Some hoaxes appear as well as some real stories, just like now in the UFO phenomenon. Then there's something begins to happen in the world. Tensions start to rise. And I'm not attributing all of this to the presence of the airships at all. What I'm saying is that I think Alan is just right on the money, because something was happening in our world, and artists, more than anybody, were responding to it. Their minds were like being broken open, and something was here. And you said earlier you thought that it had just kind of, it was new. Now, tell us what you mean by that. That's fascinating.
Yeah, a lot of people, and who knows, really, saying this phenomenon, even Jacques Vallée said, well, this phenomenon has been around a long time, and it's shown up as fairies and elves. And I suspect that may be true on one level, but I also suspect that there's another phenomenon is happening because we are different human beings. We are multidimensional. We can pick up a phone and talk to anyone around the world. Things inconceivable to a generation ago or a couple of generations ago. So we are fundamentally different in our nervous system. And so the phenomena, like you're saying, is also different. It's evolving with us and maybe helping to evolve us in general. And so we're encountering something I feel is different. There's always been invisible realms that people have connected with, but this interface between the human mind and something greater, it is coming to a point of contact, I feel. And we're at the unknown country, the new frontier of this contact point. And this is why I think disclosure has been such a difficult moment to maneuver. Once that point is made, it completely changes our species. I think so. This is my feeling. And what also I have to say is, in the Free study, the Edgar Mitchell organization called Free, they've did a 7,000 person survey on people who have had contact experiences, and what they found was that 80% of those people associated with some form of paranormal. So the contact, the visitor experience, is part of a greater phenomena that opens up the human psyche to other realms, to other unseen realms. And of course, you know, it's been called in our field high strangeness, because it's not just, like you say, people or beings from another planet coming in and visiting us. There's something, I almost said sinister, but it's sinister to our
sense. It's sinister. There's a sinister side to it, no question.
Yeah, I guess it is sinister, but not to fear it because it's sinister, but to welcome it in its all its weirdness and complexity.
Yeah, that's well said, because it feels sinister because of how much it knows. Mm-hmm. When you're face to face with the Greys, they know you. You know it immediately. You know it instantly. And that is shocking, because you don't know yourself as well as they know you. You know that, and you know that right away too. And I've been there and done that many times, and it never ceases to be shocking. Just a few nights ago, there was something in here in this apartment, and I saw its dark eye looking at me. And I mean, it had two eyes, but I could only see it from one angle. And that eye was incredibly penetrating. That's all I can say about it. I'm not scared of it anymore, because I've had it happen so many times, but it is very powerful. Now, Alan, I want to ask you two very simple questions.
Yeah.
And you'll be able to answer them easily. What is it? And where did it come from?
Well, those are great questions. No, those are great questions. But going back to that other point, I just want to read you the opening of War of the Worlds, which was the first book written about an alien contact with Earth. And it says, no one would have believed in the last years of the 19th century that this world was being watched keenly and closely by intelligences greater than man and yet as mortal as his own. That as men busied themselves about their various concerns, they were being scrutinized and studied, perhaps almost as narrowly as man with a microscope might scrutinize the transient creatures that swarm and multiply in a drop of water. Anyway, it goes on and on. But it's interesting. And then, of course, he talks about the invasion of this world by these creatures that we have to fight off in order to maintain our sense of an old reality. Well, it's gone too far now, I think.
Folks, you're probably hearing, I know I'm picking up some sounds.
Oh, you are?
Yeah, we can't trace them. They're not coming from Alan, and they're not coming from me. It sounds like there's a third party on the line. But this is Dreamland, and any listener, folks, who's been with this show for any length of time knows that stuff just happens here. So,
Well, thank you.
Was that you just now?
No. What did you hear?
Whoosh, sort of noise.
No, that was not me. I didn't hear it on this end, actually. So,
well, okay.
Well, but I just want to say about that last, and maybe you can cut around all. I don't know. It's a lot of work. But,
no, we're not going to. We're just going to leave it. The listeners are used to it. And it's really part of the show. It's part of the fun of the show in a way, because nobody knows where it comes from. And we have strange voices. All kinds of stuff happens here. I think it's fairly cool, and I'm just going to leave it.
Right. And it's great to know someone else. Maybe it is this dimension that's bleeding through to
right.
us.
And playing practical jokes. Of course, I was a notorious practical joker when I was young. I'm not now, folks. I do not do that anymore. But before I got involved in the communion experience, I was big into practical jokes. And since then, my entire relationship with the visitors can be looked upon as one big prank played on me.
Well, yeah, like karma, you know.
Karma, exactly, exactly. But let's get back to we've sort of diverted here a little bit. Let's get back.
No, but
go ahead.
You asked me what's it all about, right?
Yeah.
What
is it? Well, who are they, and why are they here, and why is this happening?
Well, like I said, allude to the War of the Worlds, which was our first psychic defense of our world being different. They've already invaded our world. They're already part of our consciousness. They have already manipulated art in a way, perhaps, because they live in an abstraction. They live in the realm of apprehension and not comprehension. And that's the difference between left brain awareness and right brain awareness. It's when the wave function is collapsed, things become solid. If the wave function is not quantum physics, where you're in the zone of seeing all possibilities, they live in that realm. They live in the realm of the abstract, the unknown, but the felt presence. So what they're calling us to do is become the feeling creatures of this other sensing that we have. Beyond the five senses, we have another sense, and we have a sense of space. We have a sense of time. We have a sense of awareness. We can project our consciousness outside of our body, and they, this is my guess, want us to wake up to who we really are as sentient beings. So when we meet them, we know we're the same on a sentient level, on a soul level, maybe even greater. I don't know. But they don't have power over us. Only they might have a greater intelligence. But on the sense of soul, the sense of the eternal self, they are our equals. They are our companions, and we've been so disconnected from our humanity, from our sense of true being, that we've forgotten who we were. We've never learned that. And once we wake up, then we'll know.
You know, this strange stuff started to happen in the 1890s, and then comes the 20th century, a mass suicide attempt, frankly, is made by mankind. There's no other way to describe the wars of that century. They made no sense. They weren't necessary. World War I, no one even to this day can understand quite why it happened. It basically happened because of railway schedules. I mean, come on, and millions upon millions of people, the flower of youth of Europe was killed, murdered. And then comes World War II. This nincompoop in Germany decides to steal, to basically mug Europe and Russia for their land and territory, and to take the whole thing over for one little country, which didn't have anything like the amount of population needed to achieve such an insane goal anyway. And it failed, of course. It was not an attempt to take anything over. It had only to do with one thing, and that is killing and killing and killing. What happened? Why are we like getting, we're desperate here. Now we're facing this bizarre climate crisis that seems to get worse and worse every day and more dangerous. It's so odd. And this presence, what is its motive, Alan? Because its motive is deeply connected with all of this that we've just been discussing. Has to be.
It does have to be. And, you know, Charles Fort said that in his research that we are being manipulated by these creatures. He says we're food for these higher intelligences. But I think they're pushing us to grow up, to take charge of our planet, our bodies, and our minds. And unless we do, we will be victims of this unconsciousness that we see running the political show right now.
Well, it's been running a political show for a darn long time. I mean, look at ancient Rome. It had like six emperors who weren't insane in its whole period, all those hundreds of years. And then one despot after another. We're terribly bad at leading ourselves. We always have been. Get into trouble with that.
So what we have to do is realize that who we are is infinite. I mean, it sounds kind of cliche and silly to say, but, you know, if we keep being, like Jung said, what we don't make conscious becomes our fate, and we are being subjected to the fate of the environment because we've been unconscious about our
ways. And now, we're coming to the end of our time together for Free Dreamlanders. We've got another half hour for our subscribers, and during that half hour, we are going to the Pine Ridge Lakota Sioux Reservation where Alan and I were present. Did you do that, Alan?
What did you hear?
A huge click.
No, I'm not clicking anything. Was it a click? No.
Okay. All right. Well, anyway, somebody is very pleased or very displeased that we're going to talk about what happened on the Lakota Reservation.
Well,
I don't know.
Can you start over that intro to the Lakota Reservation?
We'll do that in a minute.
Okay.
But suffice to say that we had I had the most extraordinary experience of my life. And to an extent, Alan shared it. And we're going to talk about it. And it will be in my new book, A New World. It's central to the meaning of the whole book. And it just happened. It just happened in July. So that's what we're going to be talking about in the third half hour of the show. I'm just letting the subscribers know that and letting the Free Dreamlanders know it too, because you should subscribe. This is a real journey happening here. This is the real deal. It's not just a bunch of podcasters babbling away. This is real. This is the cutting edge where it is really unfolding. And you listened today to one of the most interesting people I know, who himself did not fully understand until he got on this show just why he is so interesting and such an extraordinary being. You can get more of Alan Steinfeld on YouTube at youtube.com/newrealities. And you can go to his old hacked website, newrealities.com, where there is still a lot of good stuff. So Alan, this is Alan Steinfeld and Free Dreamlanders. Thank you so much for being with us. And remember, the message boards on unknowncountry.com are free. The news is free. There's lots of free programming. We do all we can to make as much of this as accessible as possible. Thank you for taking an interest.
You've been listening to Dreamland. Be sure to tune in again next week. Dreamland is brought to you by UnknownCountry.com and its family of subscribers. Unknown Country was founded by Ann Streber. Our news editor is Matthew Frizzell. Our coordinator is Amy Safrankova. Whitley Strieber is your Dreamland host, and I'm your announcer, Ted Alexander. Thank you for listening.